and welcome to Talking Aussie Books, a weekly podcast bringing readers and writers of Australian fiction together. I'm Claudine Tinellis. As an avid reader and passionate advocate for Australian fiction, I make it my mission to spotlight local talent. So if you're looking for your next read or simply want to learn more about the Australian literary scene, this podcast is for you. Grab yourself a cuppa, sit back and relax. This episode is brought to you by HarperCollins Australia. Regular listeners might remember a few years back, I welcomed debut novelist Kelly Hawkins to the podcast. Kelly is a Newcastle-based author who landed a rare four-book deal with HarperCollins for two adult books and two children's books in 2020. Back then, we were chatting about her best-selling gripping psychological thriller, Other People's Houses, a gritty and compelling novel I simply couldn't put down. 3 years on, and Kelly has cemented her place amongst some of the best crime writers in this country with follow-up titles like All She Wants and Apartment 303. And today, listeners, Kelly celebrates the release of yet another fabulously compulsive novel, a fourth novel for adults called The Miller Women. And having just finished it, I can attest to its brilliance. Tightly woven, disturbing, and incredibly satisfying, I read this absolute page-turner in one sitting. And I'm just thrilled to have the chance to speak with this talented author today. Welcome back, Kelly.
Hi, Claudine. Thanks so much for having me back. It's good to talk to you.
So great to speak with you. And congratulations on The Miller Women. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I am really happy with this one. I'm one of those authors who's not, like, the thought of reading my own books is not, oh, no, I can't do that. I'm very hard on myself, which I think a lot of authors are. This one I really enjoy, though. I'm a lot more positive about it than I often am with what I write. I just really had fun writing it, and I do think I've learned a lot, I guess, from the other three books that I've written or the other adult books that I've written. So I feel like this one is kind of a bit more polished and a bit more well-plotted, I suppose. But I did have a lot of fun with it. So, yeah, I'm pleased you enjoyed it. It was good.
I really, really did. And as I said to you before we started recording, I didn't expect it at all. I hadn't read anything about it before I picked up the book and turned to the first page. So I literally came to it with no preconceptions. And I was hooked immediately. And I can see how much fun you would have had with these characters.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much.
As I mentioned or alluded to in my introduction, four adult novels in 4 years, plus three kids' books. Now, that is busy, my friend. How do you manage to be so productive?
Yeah, it's very busy. I haven't had a choice, I suppose. I've had deadlines and I've had book deals. I'm actually at the end of my contracts with HarperCollins at the moment. So I'm kind of feel like I'm a bit back to the beginning of my career in a way, because I'm writing again and then I'll see what happens and my agent will submit it, which is unusual because before, for the other books, and I think that's why I have been so prolific, I've had a book deal. So I've had not really much choice. I'm writing to a deadline. Is quite good in a way, I think, because it really does force you to sit down and do it and not, you know what writing's like, especially when, you know, you have a day job, like I do have a couple of jobs I do from home, various other things. It's difficult often to make that time, but having a deadline and having someone who expects a book from you at a certain time kind of puts the pressure on you. So yeah, I would basically write two a year, I suppose, like one adult and one kids, which I kind of would sit down and do one at a time. I would never try and write two of them at the same time because that, yeah, they're very different, as you can imagine. The books I write for kids are middle grade, but they're kind of funny and adventurous books, whereas the adult books are a lot darker. There is still comedy, I think, or humour in the adult books as well, but they're quite different. So I would write one, and at the same time, I guess I'd be thinking about the other book. I'd have an idea of what I was going to write. And then once the first draft was written for, say, the adult book, that would go to my agent. And then, you know, she would have a look at it. And while that process was happening, I would start the kids' book. And then there's all the editing, obviously, that goes on as well. So generally, and then books would come back to me to do edits, sometimes big edits like structural edits, which you have to put aside like maybe a month to do. Smaller edits, maybe not so long. But yeah, it's a challenge to, I have been lucky that I've been with HarperCollins for both my adult and kids' books because there's an element there of them working together. So there wasn't a competition. I wasn't like, oh, you know, this publisher wants this book right now, so I have to do both. Having them both with HarperCollins, I think, was good because they could talk between themselves and they could talk to me and say, you know, we know you've got the kids one. We know you've got to do that soon. We know you've got edits for this. So it worked out, but yeah, it's busy.
I can only imagine. Now, I know that you said writing the adults' books are quite different from the kids' books, but I wondered if you found it hard to switch between them because, I mean, let's face it, your adult books have some fairly dark themes. Is it easy for you to switch off, or is it hard but also a relief to be working on your kids' books?
I actually love it. I didn't find it difficult at all. It's really nice to have that variety because often when you do get a book deal, you're expected to write the same thing, which it's what you people you're what you're known for. But I was kind of lucky in that both my adults and kids books were picked up at the same time. I had already written one of each, so with both of them picked up at the same time, I guess I got the chance to keep going in both genres. And I really like the adult ones. Are kind of, I find them more difficult. I think the plotting, and it's definitely more difficult. So the kids' books were always a bit of a nice relief. You know, you come back and you'd be like, oh, what fun things can I throw into this book? And it always is quite fun. So, yeah, for me, I don't find it difficult. I'm probably lucky. I feel lucky that I get to do both.
What a joy to be able to do two things that you love and put your passions into two very different styles, I guess.
Yeah.
Kelly, when you started writing, I was always really interested about this. When you started writing, did you think that crime or psychological thrillers was where you were headed?
No, not really. I think I've always liked writing lots of different things. The actual very first things I wrote before I had anything published were YA fantasy. Yeah. So I think I've always just written whatever idea comes to me. I had kids, I was reading different books then, so that sort of was something I'd been reading, and I think it was all the rage at the time. A lot of YA fantasy out there, and there still is, and I love that. And I like reading widely. And no, I never really had I probably was always thinking I would be more of a children's writer because I started writing when my kids were young. But then I had the idea for Other People's Houses, and it was a really strong idea in my head. So I actually got a scholarship to Allen and Unwin writing a novel once a week. It was a 6-month course, so I drove down to Sydney once a week for 6 months as I wrote that book. So it kind of gave me, I think it gave me a structure, and it helped me just to make myself write it. I think I've always just kind of wanted to write, and back then when you don't have book deals or whatever, you can write whatever you want in your spare time. So I kind of just was writing whatever I had an idea for, and then the same with the children's books. I just had the idea for my School for Talking Pets book was another really strong idea in my mind, so I just kind of wrote it. Having said that, I do mostly read crime, and I always have. I do read widely, but that's probably my favourite genre, especially things that keep you reading, that really suck you in, that make you want to read it quickly. So I guess that's what I've always liked reading the most.
Yeah, fantastic. One of your jobs is writing reports for a private investigator. And I wondered how influential that part of your working life was in terms of, you know, getting ideas or understanding the psychology behind people's actions.
I don't think it influences me as much as it's just part of what I like. Like, I am a sticky beak, and I always say this in interviews or whatever. I think writers are. We're really just interested in other people and in everything, but in other people and their motivations. And so I think that's probably why I applied for that job in the first place, because it's interesting. Just you don't see a lot about their, you know, people's lives, but it's interesting, and it makes you think, oh, what's going on? And you do, I suppose, run with ideas. Yeah, I just think I'm a sticky beak who's curious about people and all sorts of people, and, you know, yeah, and I'm just always wanting to find out more about them. So I suppose that's partly why, even though it doesn't really, it's not that salacious. It doesn't really give me, you know, really exciting ideas, but I think it's just part of being a writer is that I enjoy it. Mostly boring, you know, they don't do a lot. They just go to the shops and stuff. Like, it's not as though I'm writing about really exciting stuff.
Yes, although I did have visions of you being shocked by the actions of people in their daily lives and going, oh, that sounds really good. I think I might put that in my next novel.
Yeah. I would like to keep an eye out for that. Yeah. if I find anything.
Oh, I love it. Okay, so let's talk about The Miller Women. It's a multi-generational story with a fascinating twist. But Kelly, for those who have yet to pick up this book, I wondered if you could tell me a bit more about the story.
So it is about the Miller women. So there's three women. The book starts with Nicola, who's the mother in the story. She's in her late 30s. It's set in a small-ish town. It's called Arundel. It's a made-up town, but it's kind of based on Armidale or Bathurst. I went to school in Armidale and university in Bathurst. So It's a cold kind of town, cold weather, winter town. So it starts up with Nicola. A teenage girl goes missing. Her name's Kara. And the interesting thing, I suppose, for the readers is that the Nicola's first thought when this teenage girl goes missing is that she worries that her daughter, Abby, might have something to do with the girl going missing, which is kind of an unusual thing for a mother to worry about for her teenage daughter. So we start to see that they've got secrets. We start off with Nicola's point of view, the first kind of third of the novel, and then we move into Abby's point of view. And from there, we see that Abby's got secrets like her mother, and we find a bit about what's happened between Kara and Abby. So in the past and in the present, so there's all sorts of things going on there. And then finally, we come to Joyce, who's the grandmother, Nicola's mother and Abby's grandmother. And we find out that Joyce, too, has her own secrets, and that all these women's secrets are affecting their current life, the things that they've had to live with. And then in the final section, things come to a head when we see what type of women the Millers are when they're threatened by all these secrets that are coming back. And we find out what has happened to Kara as well. So there's a lot going on, I think, in this one. The timeline, I think, for this one's different from my other books too, because we have kind of, the book starts with Nicola, who's in the present, and then we go to Abby, we back up a bit, and then we go forward to Joyce. So that was a bit of a challenge to write as well. But so it's basically a book about these women, and I did kind of choose the name the Miller Women, kind of with a bit of a play on the Killer Women, because there are a lot of secrets.
Indeed.
And a lot of, I can't give away too much about who's being killed by who, but
yeah,
there's a bit of it that goes on.
An absolutely fascinating premise, as I said earlier. And you're right, each of the women are holding on to secrets, which all seem to come to a head in the search for this missing girl, Kara Ross. And in the course of the narrative across the three points of view, I think we get a very clear picture that each of these women are clever. They're not only, you know, fiercely independent and strong women. They are clever, and they are motivated in part by their treatment at the hands of men, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I think that's why I enjoyed writing it so much, because they are strong women and they're all different from one another. But they all obviously, they have this relationship where they are very protective of one another. They are worried about one another for different reasons. But they're strong women, and they are all, I wouldn't say victims, because that's not really what they are, but they, compared to even some of my other books, I think it was a conscious choice to make them all very strong and very in control of their destiny, I suppose, even though they haven't always been.
Yeah.
And there have been moments where they've had to overcome things, especially, I suppose, Nicola and Joyce, who've both had relationships that were not good in the past. But yeah, I did enjoy writing about women who took things on, who were go-getters, or didn't just sit back and wait, you know what I mean? So it was kind of fun.
Indeed. I want to talk a little bit more about that later. But Kelly, there is a scene in this book that happens fairly early on in the novel, but to talk about it would definitely venture into spoiler territory. But what I wanted to ask you about was whether writing those scenes was difficult for you, you know, and where did you go emotionally in order to give colour and authenticity to these events?
Yeah, it was really difficult, because there was one scene in particular that I know you're talking about, and I haven't really written that sort of scene before in any of my books, actually. And yeah, when I went to write it, it surprised me by how difficult I found it and how draining I found it. And even when I go back to edit it, it did affect me more than I realized or more than I expected that it would. It's good though, because it's kind of, I feel like it has pushed me as a writer, and perhaps, you know, I'll continue to push myself to write about different things, because I really didn't expect, I guess, you know, for me, I've not been in that situation. So it was imagination, it was, you know, which is what we write most of the time anyway, but for something like that, it's particularly difficult, and you want to get it right as well. I think I haven't been through some of these things, but I want to make it real enough for people who have some experience, or even if they don't. Yeah, it's important to get these things right.
One of the things that you deal with in this book is toxic masculinity. And I think it's something that we're more aware of these days, and the effects of that culture on women. And I wanted to ask you, was that something you specifically wanted to explore in the context of this novel? And if so, why?
It wasn't really specifically, but I do find it really interesting. All my books, they are very female-centric. I have to be careful that my male characters aren't all horrible, which is not deliberate, because I love men. I have a son, and, yeah, good men in my life. So it's not like I'm but often I need baddies and they often are men, which is, you know, why I do try and at least balance it and have some men in my books who are really lovely, which is important. But yeah, this toxic masculinity is such a massive issue. And it kind of snuck in as a little thing that I didn't really expect to as well, which kind of things like that do, I suppose, when you're trying to build plot and you've got characters and then you need a way to, or a reason for things to happen. So yeah, it wasn't deliberate, but it was something that I'm really, yeah, fascinated by at the same time.
We talked a little bit about, you know, the fiercely independent natures of the Miller women and the fact that they kind of take things into their own hands. I think the other thing that comes through very strongly in this book is the importance of women having a backup plan and in case things in their life don't quite go to plan. And I think each of the Miller women in this story take that quite seriously. What happens to each of them and the way they deal with those events are not left to chance, as we kind of touched on a little bit earlier. Is there anything more that you want to say about that?
They've all done things and bad things, you would say, but for different reasons, I suppose, all of them. And I guess that's what I wanted to look at. I was curious. And I guess the idea that they've all done these things and they're all, you know, related, I was curious as to look at whether, you know, just to make people think about whether these kinds of things are carried down through the generations or not. You know, how much of this is nature and nurture? And it's not something I believe is nature, you know, but I do think it's interesting. And it was fun to try and to think of what the motivations were for each of the women and to look at different motivations for all of them. So they're doing these things that they've done for different reasons than to one another. Hopefully sometimes they're surprising reasons. It might not be why you would expect.
I just want to touch on that a little bit more. It's an interesting theme that you explore in this novel, is that propensity for crime to run in the family. Nicola, for her part, knowing her own past, is desperate to know if committing a crime is something her daughter is capable of. And in this, and this is in the context of what many would say was a fairly normal upbringing, all things considered.
Yes. Yes.
So it's an unusual thing for her to think about.
Yeah, it is. But because I think it's that thing as a mother, you always worry about your children, but not only that things might happen to them, but what they might do. I've taken it to a bit more of an extreme because she's done something that she knows was bad, even though she may have had reasons for doing it. And then she wonders, is that something her daughter, you know, has she given that? Is it her fault? Is she given that gene to her daughter? And also there's an element of, protection, like, which, she wants to look out for her daughter. There's a few, I guess, motivations in her mind as to why she would worry about Abby. But I liked the idea that it wasn't just that something might happen to her, that it might be that she might do something and makes you wonder, I suppose.
Mm, just another thing parents need to feel guilty about.
Yes. Yeah, and it's basically that idea, but just taken to an extreme, or just taken down a slightly different path.
So in writing this aspect of the novel, Kelly, did you undertake any research on the issue from a psychological or sociological point of view?
Yeah, I did a lot of reading about different, especially, and I can't give this away because it is kind of important, but especially to do with Cara and what happened to her, which we don't find out till the very end, so I can't really talk about that. But there's a particular issue in there that I did a lot of reading about and a lot of research about, and I find that stuff just fascinating anyway. I'm one of those people that loves watching, you know, anything about murders and stuff. It's interesting to me, and I think it's interesting to a lot of people, which is why we read crime, partly, at least. Yeah. It's always that wondering, like, I guess with all three of the characters in this book, is you put yourself in their place and you think, what would I do? Or, you know, would I do the same thing? And I think that's what part of the reason, at least, we like to read these sort of psychological thrillers. It's to imagine whether we do the same. And I think that was partly why I wanted these women to be strong women, because it's more interesting for a reader. You'd like to believe that you'd be the one, you know, on the front foot, not the one sitting back, you know, whether we would or not, I don't know. But yeah, so I guess the research is fascinating, and it's very easy to just go down rabbit holes, as you, I'm sure you know, when you're researching stuff like that. But it is, it's very interesting.
Yeah, indeed. I also found this fascinating and wondered what the psychology behind all of that was.
Yeah.
You mentioned Cara, and Though we don't meet Kara in the present narrative as she's gone missing, we meet her through each of the Miller women in their past narratives. And suffice it to say, she is one incredibly interesting character. I think three words that I used to describe her was diabolical, conniving, and scheming. They were the words that came to mind. Was that always the way that you intended to portray her, or did she evolve this way while you were writing?
No, pretty much. I do like the idea that you've got, and I like to have strong women, and they can be bad as well. It's also interesting as a reader, I suppose, to read about someone who's just a bit of, is she evil? I don't know. It kind of flips the trope of the young girl going missing that we have a lot, how they get all the media focus. They're beautiful. She's very, a very attractive young woman, and she's gone missing, but she's really not very nice. And there's links between her and the other women. So yeah, I didn't want her to be a lovely young girl. It was deliberate.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, you did an incredible job, because she, as you say, she was not nice.
No.
I mean, nobody deserves to go missing, but she definitely wasn't.
No, but she wasn't nice. We needed reason for her to go missing too. And I guess that gave reason, for her to go missing, is that lots of people didn't like her. And even though she's kind of hard to like, there's a couple of times when you can kind of see why you can definitely see why she's become the way she is. So, like I said, I like to have people who are going to be the villains, but I like really try not to have someone be fully the villain. Or if they are bad, it's good to have a reason for us to be able to see, I can understand now why, that person has become that way, because this and this happened to them, throughout their life, or it's to a certain point. So there's a lot of things like that, I guess. I always try and give my characters reasons for being what they are.
Yeah, indeed. Now, talking about some of the reasons why Kara might have been the way she was, you touch on a phenomenon in this book, Kelly, which I'm sad to say I feel is becoming more and more common, and that is kids or young adults making these online subscriber accounts. No joke, I have heard of kids posting on these platforms to earn money, even if it's just pictures or videos of their feet for the enjoyment of people with various fetishes. So I was really intrigued by the appearance of this in your novel. Can you talk more about this and why this was something you wanted to include?
Well, I guess I started writing it a while ago now, and there was a lot of OnlyFans stuff in the media about young girls or anyone making money doing this sort of stuff. And I just thought it was fascinating I just find it fascinating and scary and concerning as well. And I just thought it's just be interesting to include that in some way. I'll tell you, I had to be very careful doing that research because you don't want to go down that path. It was like, oh my God, what I was looking at was not great sometimes. But yeah, I do find it interesting. Things that these young kids are now exposed to, and my kids are 18 and 20, so they're kind of just around that, are a bit past it. But, you just hear so many stories from them, from online, from all sorts of things about what kids are getting up to on these sort of sites. And in this case, the person doing it was younger than 18. I don't know. I think they've probably cracked down on that a bit more than how they were a few years ago. But definitely for a while, young girls were, younger than 18 were finding it quite easy to get around the rules and set up accounts. And, yeah, it's quite scary. It seemed also something that some girls would do, that some people would do, that they would think this is a good way to make easy money and they feel in control, that they have the control. But you sort of, as an older person, it's worrying, I think.
Indeed it is. I'm with you. Very scary stuff as a mother of a teenage daughter.
As a mother, my goodness. Yeah.
I too have heard plenty of stories where young girls are creating these accounts and you just can't help but feel this is just so wrong. This is still exploitation, even if they are in control, if they believe that they're in control of that situation, and the fact that there are people out there willing to pay big amounts of money.
Yeah, it's insane, really. The internet is changing and growing all the time, and the sort of things that we just wouldn't have even thought of these things 10 years ago, 20 years ago. It's just amazing how it changes and what, new generations are growing up with as normal.
Yeah.
Things indeed. That, I never had to even think about.
So the story takes us from this town that's kind of like based on Armidale and Bathurst, but it's kind of located up on the north coast of New South Wales. That's kind of where I got the feeling that it was, sort of somewhere south of Byron. But it also, the story also takes us to the Rocky Mountains of Canada, two quite different locations. So can you tell me a bit more about that?
The last book I set was in Sydney, and before that it was Newcastle. I wanted a small town, and I didn't want a real town. When she gets small, it just seems better to use a made up place. We can all kind of picture it, and you don't ruffle too many feathers then. It's not too specific. So I wanted somewhere, I didn't want a typical really summery kind of town. I wanted more like a wintry place, you know, up on the tablelands that has cold winters. And then the Rockies was kind of, I don't know why I said it there. It was really, I wanted her to go somewhere far away. This part of the book was set when she was, it was a flashback to when she was having a gap year, basically. So she was set 20 years ago when she was 18. And I think I just really liked the idea of, I love it there and I've been there. So I guess it was picking somewhere I knew. And then I can imagine her, being a backpacker, losing herself. But it could have been lots of different places. But I liked that kind of remoteness, I suppose, far from home. Maybe less people than if I'd set it somewhere like Europe, I think. Basically, I just, it's nice to set things in different places. So you write about new different things, you know, it's kind of just fun.
Yeah, a bit of armchair travel for us readers as well.
Yeah.
Kelly, if there was one thing you'd like readers to take away from this novel, what would it be?
Really, I just wanted something, like you said, something that was a page turner, that you really just saw these women for being three very different women, but also I really, their connection was really important to me. And even though they're very different, even though they're, you know, they've got lots of issues and secrets, they're very strongly together. And I guess that was really important for me. It's a book about family, kind of weirdly, family murder. So it's a book about women, I guess, too. A good read, hopefully, and fun.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it was all of those things. So thank you very much. The last time I chatted with you, I asked you for some writing tips, but I wondered if this time you might tell us what you know about yourself as a writer now that you didn't know before you were published.
I think I know that I can do it, because it's writing a book is hard. Every time I sit down and write another one, it feels like a mountain, you know. It's like, can I do this? So I guess I know now that even if I feel that way, I can do it. It will come, I will get there, you know, in the end, even if it takes time, if it takes, you know, help, whatever. And I guess the other part of that is getting advice and the writing community, which when I started out, I didn't tell anyone that I was even writing a book. So I'd never showed my work to anyone except my immediate family. No one knew I was trying to write a novel. And now I kind of realize the importance of getting advice and taking advice, having worked with, you know, the amazing people at HarperCollins, the editors and everyone there. The advice that you get from those kind of people is just invaluable. It really does improve your work from something that might be okay to something that, you know, is much, much better. It's surprising to someone who never really just thought writing was a really kind of quiet thing you did on your own, how much of a team, you know, group work it is, really, and how much people help you. And even doing these kind of podcasts, the support from writers on Instagram, it's a really supportive community. So I think I didn't really realize that even existed when my first book came out. I was totally clueless.
So if you had one tip to offer writers out there in terms of trying to get published or, you know, just finishing that book, what would that piece of advice be?
Probably one I've heard before, but it would really just be to keep at it, because it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of writing just to get, you know, you need to get better, you need to keep going. So don't give up, because I think someone once told me that if you want it enough and you keep working hard enough, you will get something published. And I think that's right, because it might take you longer, it might take a while before someone sees it and wants it, and there's a lot of rejection. Every writer would know that, virtually every writer anyway, in the beginning. But if you want it enough, I think you'll get there. So I think don't give up would probably be my advice. Keep writing and keep improving, because you will get there in the end.
Oh, thanks so much for that, Kelly. That's terrific advice. And if listeners wanted to connect with you or learn more about you and your books, how can they do that?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook, just Kelly Hawkins. I think Kelly Hawkins Writer maybe on Instagram. I do have a website, but it's not particularly well used. Probably Instagram's the best place to find me.
Yeah, but it's got all your books on there. And your website's got all your books and all your links and everything. Yeah. Kelly, I'm in complete awe of your achievements to date. You have just been so incredibly prolific. Once again, congratulations on the Miller Women, an absolutely terrific read. I feel sure that it's going to be an instant success. Thank you for joining me on Talking Aussie Books today.
Thanks so much for having me. Always really nice to talk to you.
That's a wrap, folks. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please drop me a line via my webpage at claudinetonellis.com, via Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Alternatively, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Until next time, happy reading!